Hey, this is Bill Fichtner, and you're listening to Out Now. Stay tuned.
We are now recording. This is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is not here, which is a shame because this is one of our, this is a big episode for us. Out Now is a film podcast which has Abe and I normally discuss the new movies weekly. However, this is a big bonus for us. We have a number of like major points of the year concerning this podcast. One is of course the top 10 films of the year. Another is the Oscars. We tend to have a big show for that. And the biggest one though is our summer movie gamble, which is a two-parter with a cliffhanger and everything. This is where, at the beginning of the summer, which you may recall, you can find that episode on iTunes now, Abe and I, along with seven other guests, frequent guests of the show, friends of the show, we put together lists predicting what we thought would be the 10 most successful films of the summer at the domestic box office. Now, it's literally Labor Day, which is when the end of summer films happens for what we were going on with this list. And so now we have the results of that show. So we are going to go, be it the guest that I have with me tonight, we're going to go over what the results were for the summer box office and go over who did poorly in this challenge and who did the best. And so joining me to go over the results for our fifth annual summer movie gamble, we've been doing this for 5 years, we have from Game Revolution and Geek and Sundry, he found Dory getting angry at the apocalypse. It's Peter Paris.
Hey guys. Yeah, this was quite a summer. I'm not looking forward to seeing how terrible I did with this.
Okay. Straight out of North Carolina, he's crafting the Beyond to prepare for a resurgence. It's pro wrestler Alan Aguilera.
Well, how you doing? I can't even fake that. How you doing, Aaron? I don't even want to try. What's going on?
And
and also, I'm pretty confident that I'm the winner. And you're going to bow down to my feet by the end of this. So.
And lastly, from Forbes, he went through the looking glass and came out a Ghostbuster. It's Scott Mendelson.
Always a pleasure to be here.
All right, guys. As Alan and Peter have already hinted at, the summer went a drastically different route than some of us were predicting. There were a lot of, not necessarily like huge bombs, but there are certainly films that underperformed compared to what we thought would happen. A number of notable films did not even crack the top 10. There were some surprises. Others just pretty much hit exactly how we thought they were going to hit. Captain America.
Shocker.
Well, quick show note stuff real quick, I guess, just to delay this a little further.
You got to take care of business. I get it.
Exactly, yeah. iTunes reviews and ratings are good to get those. Helps out our show. Helps other people find our show. We like to do these special bonus episodes, such as these, you know, summer gambles and our commentary tracks and whatnot. And, you know, if you want to support that by logging on to iTunes, searching for our show at Now, Theron, and Abe, and giving us an iTunes review or a star rating, that'd be great. And, it gives Abe and I the confidence to keep doing this show for free, that's for sure. And also, emails. We asked last week on the show if anyone wanted to make any predictions of what they thought would happen on the summer gamble as far as who would win. And so we got a couple emails in that matter.
Peter would die.
Yeah, we got Peter would die from Alan A. That was a weird one.
Oh, God, I was kidding.
No. Okay.
That's not. That's, yeah. Yeah, I did not say that. Yeah. That's not me.
I have, I think Aaron will win. That's from Justin W. And we have, I know that this summer the odds were definitely in Abe's favor. That's from Dion, a longtime listener. Thanks for the emails there. You can email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know any of your thoughts. Or maybe even if you participated in a summer gamble of your own or something, let us know how things went for you. But let's move on. Let's get right to it, guys. Let's get to the results for this summer movie gamble. So I'm going to... Bear with me, because I'm going to go over the elaborate scoring system for how this works before we get into who won and what the picks were and everything.
This is more complicated than the step-up dance competitions.
Yes, it is. I mean, that you just have to like cheer for random moments and like some kind of like meter gets set off and it all works out in the end. But here, and you can find this, you can pretty much search Summer Movie Wager and pretty much find this these rules. There are a number of sites all have these same things. But so at the beginning of the summer, all of us picked 10 films that we thought would make up the top 10 of the domestic box office. And we also picked three dark horse picks. And, you know, and obviously in order, for those top 10, and the dark horses, that doesn't really matter what order it is, just as long as you have them. And so here's how the scoring system works. If you get number 1 and number 10 dead on, you get 13 points each. You get 10 points for 2 through 9 if they're dead on, like, you know, if they're the exact right picks for any of those places. If any of those picks were one spot away from where it actually ended up within that top 10, you get 7 points. Two spots away, 5 points. And if you had picks that were anywhere in the top 10 that were, you know, more than two spots away from where they actually ended up, you get 3 points. You also get 1 point for every dark horse that made it into the top 10. I should also note that each movie counts for the just the highest number of points you can get for it. So, for example, Legend of Tarzan ended up being number 10. If you picked Legend of Tarzan at number 10, you get 13 points and that's it. You don't get any other like points if you were. So it's just whatever the highest number of points associated with each pick wins, that would be the associated number. That's
all very worldwide, or domestic?
Just domestic. I would say domestic. Repeat.
Can I just say something really quick? That I'm really every time you explain the rules, I don't pay attention. I just like, okay, I'm just glad that Aaron's gonna do all the work.
Yeah, it's so okay.
I
did all the math. I quadruple checked it, and I even found a program where I can enter in everybody's numbers and to make sure that, you know, based off computers, which are evil, they definitely calculated the correct scores. So I have all of this very confident in what we have presented here. More than 100%. Here we go. So,
Aaron, not all heroes wear capes. Sometimes they use Excel. So I appreciate it.
That's the cast of Apollo 13, Alan. You don't even tell me.
Got it.
So let's see. Before we get to, you know, the order of who did what, I'm gonna name the actual, you know, top 10 films of the summer in the domestic box office. So here we go. Number 10 was The Legend of Tarzan with $125 million. Now, I should say this is all based off Box Office Mojo. These are all accounting up to today, literally. That's the last
today.
Yes. I'm very aware that some films are not finished at the box office yet, meaning that some films will end up even higher than they are now, perhaps. But that doesn't matter because we had a cutoff, and this is the day of the cutoff. So Legend of Tarzan, number 10, $125 million. Ghostbusters, number 9 of $126 million. Central Intelligence at number 8 with $127 million. Star Trek Beyond with $155 million. X-Men Apocalypse at number 6 with $155.4 million. Jason Bourne at number 5 with $156 million. Now we take a giant shift up and go Suicide Squad at number 4 with $300
million.
The Secret Life of Pets at number 3 with $359 million. Captain America : Civil War with $407 million. And at number 1, Finding Dory with $482 million. All right. So all that's out of the way. Let's get to who. Okay, so we had 9 contestants on this week's show, or on this summer gamble. We had one tie. And we'll get to that in a second. But first, we have to get to our 8th place loser. And that is Alan Aguilera.
Son of a bitch!
Alan Aguilera, you made 29 points. It is decidedly the lowest points that
you know what?
Of all of us here.
No, that's cool. Fine, yeah. Whatever.
It is over.
Is there a maximum possible point?
The maximum. What would the max? I got it. Let me see. Let me add that up. I haven't actually added.
No, I'm
curious. I just want to see how badly he did out of a possible number of points.
13 plus what? 2 through 9. So 8, so plus 80. So 106 points will be the maximum. So yeah, that's a pretty big hit. 106 points.
Well, you know what? Feel big.
Yeah. So you had 29. That's 10. That's more over 10 points lower than anybody else on this list.
Hey, you know what? Like I said, like if I'm going to fail, I'm going to fail.
Yeah, I
should
note that there's, you know, you three are here, and I'm very happy that you guys are here. But, you know, there's a number of people that aren't here. And while some of them seem to be saying, we had scheduling problems or we're out of town this weekend or whatnot, I feel like some of them are just, they feel they're so ashamed that they couldn't even face this podcast to be on there. Which is kind of weird because, actually, a lot of these numbers aren't that bad. Just Alan is the worst one.
I mean, you're not making me feel it.
But Alan, you want to go over what your picks were for the top 10 of the summer?
Did you pick Ice Age as number 1?
No, I didn't do anything that stupid. I did other stupid things. You want me to go from 1 to...
No, you can go name your dark horses and then your top 10, 10 to 1.
Okay. So for my dark horses, I picked Warcraft because you never know. And then Now You See Me 2, and then Alice Through the Looking Glass. because I didn't know how that was going to go.
All respectable picks.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, I didn't know.
Especially for Dark Horse.
I thought it was going to be like Neighbors 2, because the first Neighbors did pretty well. It was a pretty solid R-rated film, made a decent amount of money. And then number 9 was Star Trek Beyond, because I didn't know. Anyway, and then I picked Secret Life of Pets at number 8, because I'm stupid. And then I'm an idiot, and I picked Angry Birds, because I was like, yeah, kids will like it. It's a big red thing. And then I picked Suicide Squad, which, and then Ghostbusters, because I was like, yeah, I don't like those Ghost Bros. I want to stick it to the man, and hopefully everybody, you know, gets behind me and agrees with me. And I was wrong. And then I picked Finding Dory, you know, pretty respectable, but not right. And then I thought we were going to get like a Jurassic World type size box office for ID4, which I put at number 3. I was wrong. And then I picked X-Men Apocalypse, and that movie was a dumpster fire on wheels, and like half as much as I wanted to. And then I picked Civil War, because it seemed safe. And I was like, you know what? This seems safe. I should have spent a little bit more time, maybe.
Yeah,
but also, I think
more like organizing the list seemed to be something.
Yeah, like I didn't know I had to put them into order, but I think a lot of it had to do with like, oh, well, clearly on paper, this should make at least X amount of dollars, not necessarily like, oh wow, everything except for like 6 movies underperformed, but whatever, that's cool, I don't care.
No Jason Bourne. No Jason Bourne in sight for you.
I fucking forgot.
But yeah, 29 points.
I just forgot.
Organization was your key and problem in this one.
What in my life and in this list, I assume, is my problem.
But okay, so with that in mind, moving away from your actual score in this list where you placed dead last, which I'll be happy to remind you every now and then.
That's fine, you're good.
Hey, you came on this podcast and you're brave enough to bear witness to your own results.
Hey, you know what? Would you rather not have the last place person on your list?
I'm happy that not only that you're here, but that I have the last place person on this list.
Just a little behind the scenes note, I was the one that was the most gung-ho about being on this show. I can't possibly be last.
But so moving on. Yeah, for those that recall, I believe I was the last for the first time that we did this. I was in last place on our first attempt to do a summer camp show.
Maybe moving to the South made me dumber. I got to change that.
Anyway, Alan.
Anyway,
what would be? So we're gonna do this for all of us. But what are your picks for? What's your pick for the best film of the summer?
Nice Guys.
The Nice Guys.
I love that movie. I thought it was really good. I love Shane Black. This is a real good movie. I laughed a whole bunch of times. I'm sure you guys have already talked about it, but it's my favorite movie of the year so far. I just loved it from beginning to end. The throwback credits, all the one-liners, the kind of 70s noir vibe to it. It was really good. I just really had a good time in the summer. It was my favorite comedy of the summer too. Yeah.
What's your pick for the worst film of the summer?
Fuck. It's a dead heat between Suicide Squad and X-Men Apocalypse. I don't want to pick Suicide Squad because I'm like, everybody else is jumping on that, but it wasn't a good movie. It just wasn't. It was bad. It was bad. Like, the blatant racist Mexican in the film was like my least issue, my least biggest issue in the movie. I was like, no, that's fine. I don't care. It's David Ayer. Of course he's going to throw that stereotype in there. But it wasn't good.
And I'm going to ask everyone this as well. What is what's a surprise of the summer for you?
I'm surprised how much I really liked Swiss Army Man.
Swiss Army Man, okay.
Yeah, I kind of went in blind. I was like, oh, that's weird. It's a farting corpse. I'll go watch it. And I kind of loved it. I love how it was kind of about life and the situations that lead to one thing to another and then finding out who you are and then kind of being okay with that. And then it's just a real good movie. I was like, oh, this is real uplifting. I like this movie.
All right.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Alan.
I mean, if the loser's opinion means anything, that's where I land.
It means plenty. You're a friend of the show. You've been on since the first year we've been doing this.
Yeah, but like I feel like until next year, I'm going to be that friend of the show.
Oh, yeah, you are. I mean, I'm going to refer you enough. As Summer Gamble loser Alan Aguilera. I mean, that goes without saying. All right.
Not even like loser. It's like, shouldn't have bothered playing Alan Aguilera.
Moving on. Our next two people they're not on this podcast, so you guys can you can have a sigh of relief that you're not in seventh here. But yeah, we have a tie for seventh place, and this tie goes to Jose Cordova and Brandon Peters, who both scored 40 points apiece. So since they're not here, I will say Brandon sent me his picks for the best, worst, and surprise of the summer. His best film this summer is also The Nice Guys. His worst of the summer is Independence Day Resurgence. And his surprise was that he was bored to tears by The Secret Life of Pets. So yeah, there's that.
Fair enough.
As far as their picks go, Jose, he had Jason Bourne, Neighbors 2, and Angry Birds as dark horses. And he had Central Intelligence at number 10. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Out of the Shadows at number 9. Independence Day at number 8. Alice Through the Looking Glass at number 7. Star Trek Beyond at number 6. Suicide Squad at number 5. Ghostbusters at 4. X-Men at 3. Finding Dory at 2. And Captain America at 1. So on the one hand, Jose, he had Central Intelligence in there, which only a couple people had Central Intelligence. Scott, you're one of them. In the top 10 obviously X-Men very high, that didn't help very much. Jason leaving out Jason Bourne didn't help very much. Other things for Brandon had his dark horses were Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping, which as we know is one of the lowest grossing films of the summer. I'm sure he'd be happy to defend his logic that he didn't understand the dark horse situation, but we get to make fun of him because he's not here. So that was a bad idea. The Secret Life of Pets and Ice Age were his other dark horse picks. Secret Life of Pets as a dark horse, not a wise move, as we clearly know. Let's see, as far as his number, his 10 through 1 go, he has Star Trek, Alice Through the Looking Glass, Ghostbusters, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, X-Men, Independence Day, Angry Birds, Jason Bourne, Finding Dory, and Civil War. So yeah, he bet big on Jason Bourne, he bet big on Angry Birds, and he bet big on Independence Day. Two of those are not in the top 10 right there, neither is Alice. So yeah, that sent him down pretty far. That's the tied for 7th place, 40 points apiece. Moving on now. Peter, it's still not you. It's Maxwell at number 6. He's in 6th place with 43 points. Maxwell couldn't make it to the show, unfortunately. He wanted to, but he couldn't quite get it here. But his dark horses were Ghostbusters, Turtles, and Warcraft. And his top 10 were Alice Through the Looking Glass, Secret Life of Pets, Jason Bourne, Star Trek, Suicide Squad, X-Men, Angry Birds, Independence Day, Finding Dory, and Civil War. And so, yeah, he had 43 points. So there's that. Next up is Abe. Abe is in 5th place, which might be his highest ever in these proceedings, actually. So good on Abe. He made it to the top 5, our summer gamble. With 46 points, which I checked, it's actually 1 point higher than his score from last year. So he's not only has he made it to the top 5, he's improving. So there you go for him.
Well, technically, I kind of lowered the curve, so you're welcome, everybody.
You've lost before. But
yeah, a lot.
But Abe had Warcraft, Central Intelligence, and Neighbors as his Dark Horse picks. And then he had Jason Bourne, Angry Birds, Secret Life of Pets, X-Men, Star Trek, Alice, Suicide Squad, Finding Dory, Civil War, and then Independence Day is his number 1, which clearly was not the way to go as we found out.
I laugh, but don't Google that.
What, the Independence Day was not the way to go this summer?
Yeah, don't Google that.
Okay.
Yeah. I never wrote those pieces.
That some picks should be like surefire blockbuster successes?
Yeah, December. It was said a different time.
Said by box office financial expert Forbes writer Scott Mendelson.
I said it was possible. I also thought it wouldn't be a piece of crap movie, but whatever.
I didn't know there was hypotheticals around every one of your articles. I didn't know that was a thing.
I mean,
they're all hypotheticals.
Articles for my research, so I didn't at all. I'm just a failure. I'll do out the rest of this podcast. I'm real down on myself.
So next up, he thought he would do way worse. And it's still not Peter. It's Mark Hoban. Mark Hoban at number 4 here with 47 points. So that's 6 out of all 9 of us so far. I mean, you guys all, I mean, a lot of you thought you did like way worse, but I mean, these are respectable numbers. Like these aren't terrible. Like as much as the box office seemed to disappoint us, both in terms of, I don't know, our spirits and and for the case of this very important podcast episode, I mean, these aren't the worst scores that could have happened.
This was a weird summer.
It was, and we'll get to that. We'll talk all about the summer more when we finish this off. But Mark's picks, his dark horses were Turtles, Ghostbusters, and the BFG, which are solid picks for dark horses, for sure. And his picks are the top 10 Ice Age, which did not pay off, but Alice Through the Looking Glass also didn't pay off, Star Trek Beyond, Jason Bourne, Secret Life of Pets, X-Men, Suicide Squad, Independence Day, Finding Dory, and Civil War. The biggest pattern so far is that we placed Independence Day quite high, most of us did. And obviously that Civil War was a lot of the people's picks for number one. So but taking away that one will cost you 13 points right there, and taking Independence Day away makes, yeah, it's just a big dud on your record right there. So Mark had 47 points. And so that, oh, and Mark sent me his picks for the best of the summer, which he found to be Hunt for the Wilder People, which is fantastic. His worst film pick was Alice Through the Looking Glass. And his surprise of the summer is Hell or High Water, just because that just came out of nowhere and he really loved it. So next up, Peter, it's finally you. It's you at the, you made third yeah, place. Yeah. Hey, you made third place. You are
third
a champion.
Place? I can't believe I made third place. Wow.
You made because everyone else is behind you. That's why.
You know, I finally saw the bronze and I kind of enjoyed it.
Okay. So see, there you go. Third's not the worst.
No, that's me.
Alan's the worst. We know that.
I'm the worst.
But Peter, you made third place. You got 48 points. You are a champion last year. You won the Summer of Gamble last year.
Did.
With I think like 62 points. No, yeah, like 59 points, I believe. So 48 points, not a huge come down. You still did, given your picks, which you can read, you know, in a second here. Yeah, that's you know, not a bad place to end up, I would say at all. But Peter, you want to go over your picks for what you had picked for the top?
Yeah, I mean, so it looks like I basically had seven. I mean, the order might be different, but it looks like I had 7 of the 10. So I did better than I thought. But I had X-Men, Neighbors 2, Ghostbusters, Secret Life of Pets, Alice in Wonderland, BFG, Jason Bourne, Suicide Squad, Civil War, Dory, and of course, yes, I picked Resurgence as the. I made the same mistake most of us did.
Yeah, so let's see. You nailed Jason Bourne dead on. You got Ghostbusters dead on. You're actually the only person on this list that got Ghostbusters dead on.
Really?
Yeah, so
oh, wow.
Good on you for that one. And yeah, like BFG and Alice.
Oh, I got Suicide Squad dead on too.
Oh yeah, you did. Yeah, you got Suicide Squad dead on. Yeah, but yeah, BFG, Alice, and Ice Age did nothing for you. That's or no, that or where am I looking? Sorry, wrong list. Oh yeah, I said the right thing. BFG, Alice,
oh,
Neighbors.
Right.
Neighbors did nothing for you. That was the problem.
For me, you know, my favorite movie. It's weird. I mean, I really liked Civil War. I think my honest answer was that the thing I've been saying. And Scott wrote an article about this. I think my favorite thing of the summer wasn't really one movie. It was more that, like, I don't know if we call them like just genre films or mid-size budget, like The Shallows and Don't Breathe. Those were my favorite movies of the summer. They weren't, none of them were like masterpieces, but those were all, there were a lot of good, solid, like B movies, I guess. And that was my surprise. And then my big surprise was, although I don't know what you guys thought of this. I actually really enjoyed Nerve.
I like Nerve a lot.
Oh, okay, cool. Aaron, yeah. You not
familiar. I like two-thirds of Nerve, like, as like a good, fun movie, and then the end happens. Like, all right, that's subpar, but at least the two-thirds make it overall pretty good.
The end is not great, but I still really enjoyed Nerve. I'm looking forward to rewatching it when it comes on Blu-ray. Really enjoyed it.
What was your worst of the summer?
Oh, well, because I was looking to see when things came out, so I can't say my worst of the year. But yeah, I mean, Suicide Squad for sure. Like, I was terrible. I mean, it's barely a movie. It's just so junky, and we all saw it together. Or the three of Scott, Aaron, and I, we all saw it together, and yeah, it was awful. So
thanks for the invite.
We reserve a spot at the Grove for professional wrestler Alan Aguilera. You just don't show up. That's the problem.
Also, I'm one of the people who kind of defends Batman versus Superman. I don't think it's a masterpiece, but I don't think it's anywhere near as terrible as people say it is. But yeah, Suicide Squad is pretty indefensible. I thought it was
agreed.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad made me like Batman versus Superman more.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
Because you can admire the fact that it tried to do something. It's, I don't know what Suicide Squad tried to do besides kill Adam Beach. But
The only thing Suicide Squad has is it has Will Smith and Margot Robbie.
It has movie stars giving movie star performances.
So yeah, I mean they're fine. Like,
they can
but
do that
yeah,
in anything.
Right. I can't believe Tarzan was number 10. Wow, I did not see that.
I like Tarzan.
Really?
It was fine. I had no expectations, and I walked in going, oh, this is fine.
It's certainly like, I don't hate it, but it's like,
it's
it just
Jungle,
does,
it's
it does,
Jungle Cruise, the movie.
It does nothing for me. Like, there's nothing there. Speaking
of
Tarzan, by the way, Tarzan screwed me, because I'm at number 2. I'm at number two because Tarzan and Ghostbusters decided to have a re-release this weekend. Because of that re-release, Ghostbusters managed to scramble up a couple $100,000 and suddenly go to number nine instead of number 10. And that would have made me tied for number one with Scott. But because of Ghostbusters needing its re-release, I am now at number two with 66 points.
I called up my Sony contacts and told them, get that fucker back in theaters for Labor Day.
Which is, it's still a record for me. I'm very happy with my score of 66 points. That's tremendous in my eyes.
And Aaron, they answered the call.
Okay. God, that subtitle. But yeah, so I wound up at number two here, second place with 66 points, which I'm quite proud of. I might not have won again. I've never won this. I'm not bitter about that. But all because of Ghostbusters.
That was my slow clap for you.
Thank you. And, yeah. You know, tiny violins playing behind me, too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, my Dark Horse picks were Turtles, Warcraft, and Central Intelligence. So one of those paid off. My top 10 were Ghostbusters, Star Trek Beyond, Alice Through the Looking Glass, Jason Bourne, X-Men, The Secret Life of Pets, Suicide Squad, Independence Day, Civil War, and then Finding Dory. So the key right there, obviously, was picking Finding Dory as number one. That certainly helped. Having Suicide Squad at number four helped me. X-Men was dead on as well. And then I was just pretty close with the rest of my stuff here. If only Independence Day seemed like a surefire bomb, it would have been a different story. I tried hard. Didn't quite pull it off, but I tried hard. My as far as my best film of the summer, I go Kubo and the Two Strings. That is my favorite film of the summer. My worst film is easily Suicide Squad. No question, Suicide Squad there. And my surprise is, why was X-Men that bad? Like, why did that have to happen? That was,
why did they lift the embargo a month early? Like, I can't understand.
I didn't get that either.
Aided in the disappointment because, like, I was going in thinking, well, yes. I was set up for, like, a major success here. It's like, well, clearly this movie has to be great. I'm seeing it at the beginning of May. Like, why would this be a bad movie? And yeah, that it was like,
there is an article in Deadline from the weekend basically trying to sell the myth that this wasn't that bad of a summer. And one of the lines is, oh, you know, Fox screwed up with X-Men because they showed it too early to jaded fanboy critics. It's like, jaded? You have any idea how excited I was that night? You remember? You were there?
Yes.
I thought this was going to be the best X-Men movie in, like, 15 years.
Yeah.
Well, if they showed it in early May, it's right after you guys saw Civil War. So you guys.
I did. I saw it literally the day before I saw Civil War.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
Not only did they show it to us like a month early, the embargo dropped about 12 days before it opened overseas.
So yeah,
to my knowledge, that has never happened, where they drop an embargo really early and they end up getting trashed.
Yeah, it's weird. That's just weird.
There are cases where a movie opens overseas early, so by default the embargo must fall, and you know, Huntsman Pan, something like that. You know, there's no hiding. But I've never ever seen where an embargo drops really early and the film gets trashed.
That's about some terrific test screenings.
The best thing about X-Men Apocalypse is that it gave me a lot of comedic material because they kept saying that Apocalypse's special power was being Tim Gunn because all he did was create costumes and it was fantastic. It's like, oh, Storm, you've got to put some Trosome in your hair. It was great. It's been a long summer.
All right. So
anyway,
before we get to more summer movie discussion about what just happened at this box office and so on and so forth, let's get to our winner for the year, which is Scott Mendelsohn, of course. Scott Mendelsohn.
Good job, Scott. Yay.
Thank you, Secret Life of Pets.
You were in first place with 71 points, which is easily a new record for our summer gamble.
Really?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I think the highest actually was Peter last year with the 59 points, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Shit.
And how many points did I have?
You had 29 points out. You were dead last.
That was how many?
You were 29 points.
29.
Yeah, 29. It's
you know, it's only he only beat me by 115%, so it's not like a big deal.
Scott, do you have your picks in front of you?
I don't. I mean, I know the first top four.
I'll put them in the chat for you. You can read them right here.
Sorry, my dark horses were Alice, Angry Birds, and Conjuring 2. My top 10 were Central Intelligence, Star Trek Beyond, Jason Bourne. Holy shit, I was off on all of these. Ghostbusters, X-Men, IV in fifth place. Good job, Scott. Here's why I won. Suicide Squad, Secret Life of Pets, Civil War, and Finding Dory, which were the top four. Let's be honest, I bungled everything else.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you still, those picks that you had, I mean, for one thing, you had Central Intelligence in the top 10, so that's the number of points right there that nobody else got except for Jose.
Yeah.
You had Star Trek, Jason Bourne, and Ghostbusters all around where they were.
Yeah.
You had X-Men Dead On, and that's it. The only thing that, Independence Day is the only movie that you had on your list that wasn't in the top 10.
Yeah.
So, I mean, having...
And I thought Tarzan was going to be a super flop, so...
All of us
like
did.
It's not like I would have, you know, if I had picked something else, I would have been right, because I never would have picked Tarzan.
None of us had Tarzan even as a dark horse. None of us predicted that Tarzan would be even in the top 10. Like, it would be one thing if it was a dark horse, or, you know, it made like 11, 12, or... By the way, as far as 11, 12, and 13 go, it's Angry Birds, Bad Moms, and Independence Day. Those are the actual, like, dark horses of the summer. at least the 11 through 13. Bad Moms, by the way.
Well, I think it's that we, you know, if I, you know, I would have told you that, yeah, I think Bad Moms had a potential to do $100 million at the beginning of the summer, but I figured there would be a lot more movies that would have done a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll get right back to that in a second.
Yeah, and as you can see, there's this huge chasm between, you know, 155, 156, and, you know, 300 million, and there's just nothing in between.
Yeah, it seems like those are the placeholders where those films that you thought were going to be big would have gone.
Yeah.
But they're not there. Like, Independence Day could have easily been like a $200 million movie, but it wasn't.
Yeah, but, you know, Atlas could have Night Museum 2 numbers, than 170.
Yeah. But before we move on to more of that discussion, Scott, you want to name your best film of the summer?
Oh.
Your favorite?
If I'm going just pure mainstream, Pete's Dragon. I loved it. I thought it was by far the best big film of the summer. And it was exactly what I needed, exactly when I needed it. To pull me out of what, let's be honest, was like a two-month funk of just really mediocre, disappointing, big-scale movie going. It wasn't to say everything was bad. There was a lot of good stuff. But the biggest of the big disappointed, we almost week after week after week. Worst film? Suicide Squad. Easy. That might be the worst film of the year. And I, as someone that panned but somewhat defended Batman v Superman, yeah, it's not even a competition. You know, if Batman v Superman is, I don't know, you know, Amazing Spider-Man 2, then Suicide Squad is freaking Spawn. I know we just watched Spawn, but
which we recently did a commentary for.
I can attest it's still that bad.
to LXG. I've been calling Suicide Squad worse than LXG because I LXG.
I prefer LXG because at least it's almost coherent. In fact, but my dark horse or surprise. I was surprised how much I enjoyed Central Intelligence. The trailers were not very good. I figured it was the kind of movie that would make a lot of money despite being not very good, as you can have with comedies. And that's comedy. Star-driven comedies are critic-proof. Those are the critic-proof blockbusters because people go because they like the stars. Who cares if the critics say it's terrible? I was surprised how much of that I genuinely enjoyed it. I think The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, gives a performance of his career.
It's funny because I walked into it and I actually liked the trailers more than you had. And then I walked out, and I'm the exact opposite, where it's like, well, I wasn't very impressed by it as far as just
laughs and
whatnot. Like, I think The Rock's, I agree with you, I think The Rock's fine, I think Kevin Hart has, I think the movie itself, for me, it, like, every 5 minutes it had, like, a moment, but then there was just a lot of, like, well, this is bad in between it, and that was my main problem. But it's just funny, where, like, you walked in not thinking you were going to like it, and you did. I walked in thinking, okay, this will be fine, and it wasn't. But
Aaron, was it, I mean, because I missed it, and I'm looking forward to watching the Blu-ray, but... I mean, is it like Ride Along 2? I mean, like
No, I didn't hate the movie. I think it's just for me. It's just, you know, it's a thing that happened that I saw once and it made me laugh. Kind of like Ride Along 2 didn't make me laugh. Kind of Ride Along 2 was like.
Would you say it's like Melissa McCarthy's The Boss, which you and I enjoyed more than most people?
Well, again, I liked that movie. I didn't like.
I enjoyed that more than most people as well.
Three of us
liked that movie for some reason.
Right, everyone hated it except us. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, to be totally honest, the biggest surprise of the summer was that they ended up not screening Independence Day for critics.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see that coming in a million years.
Probably because they learned their lesson with Apocalypse.
Well, they learned the wrong lesson. Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, they would have gotten baked either way.
Yeah, no, they were done. I mean, that movie was batshit crazy. I loved it. It was so dumb.
Do you think if Independence Day had screened and had an embargo lift, like, you know, 2 days before or whatever, and the reviews were that bad that audiences would be like, well, I got to go see this for myself? Like, you think that it was ever a possibility?
I think like that hurt, run? As well as the lack of conventional press. Because it's not like you saw everybody doing talk shows and magazine covers and all that crap, you know, 2 weeks beforehand.
I think it's the
lack of Brent Spinner. The story became, you know, oh my God, they're just not doing any press for this. And that was the story. That was the narrative going into the release. And that, in an extent, hurt it, yes. Mm-hmm. I think if they had given it a regular press screening with embargo, plus you have, you know, Jeff Goldblum, even, you know, the younger kids, Liam Hemsworth, whatever, doing the talk show rounds, telling funny anecdotes, sharing whatever, then at least you create the impression that this is just a normal blockbuster, not that this is something radioactive.
So what do you think? Why do you think they did that? Like, why do you think they didn't put, you know, muscle behind what was could have been
I think
one
they
of their
over shows? They overreacted to what happened with X-Men and with Fantastic Four.
For like that would make sense to me for, I guess, like a, you know, a less expensive movie. You know the budget on Independence Day?
165-ish.
Okay, so that's, you know, pretty big, right? Like,
and I also think they thought they were going to make it overseas. Though.
Yeah.
I think they thought, unfortunately, like too many people do, that, oh, we're going to do 150 in China. It's going to be okay.
So it did 280 over foreign.
Yeah,
so
it did like 382, which isn't awful. When you consider it, again, you know, only it only cost $165 million to make.
So but, do you think it turned a profit after all, or no?
It might in 20 years.
it's not like they spent that much on marketing, apparently. So
yeah,
well, that too.
Yeah. Like, it was that Super Bowl ad, and that's pretty much it.
That's a weird one. I mean, it's. Anyway, I don't want to keep picking on it because I've done so several times this summer. But that's an anomaly in terms of how a film like that is marketed and received.
Well, it's weird because it's
scary.
It's an exact opposite of the anomaly that was Jurassic World, where we knew it would be big, but none of us knew it would be that big.
And that's a film where, you know, that embargo dropped Wednesday morning, which, you know, was, for example, later than Batman v Superman, later than Suicide Squad, later than The Force Awakens.
What was that? Film as critically lauded as
it had, like, it's like
it got mixed positive reviews.
It's like a 73 or something on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah,
but also I think Jurassic World is a better movie than.
Oh, it is. I mean, there's no question that that's a better movie than Independence.
It's a better movie in the way that explains why it made so much money after it opened, because it was, you know, you did get your money's worth. It was big, splashy, IMAX friendly, you know, popcorn entertainment.
Four
you got dinosaurs. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. See, it's weird for me because, like, on paper, I would rather prefer Resurgence because at least it's trying to kind of be something new. Jurassic World is basically just the same Jurassic Park movie, but yeah, I can't.
I would disagree.
Deny.
I would very much disagree.
Because Jurassic Park's an idea of, like, what if we had this park and let's test that out. This is the park actually opened. Like, it is something different.
That,
like,
yeah. Okay. Yes, that's true.
Independence Day didn't do anything different. Like, it's the same movie.
It feels very much like they're trying to do park again, where the music is and everything. I'm just saying that on paper, I would applaud something like Resurgence, but I mean, Resurgence is so terrible. I mean, it really is barely a movie. I mean, I didn't like World, but yeah, like Scott said, World is, yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you wanted to see. It's big dinosaurs and Chris Pratt and everything, so.
Well, that's, I mean, you could argue that Independence Day is exactly what you kind of want to see if you're going to see a sequel to Independence Day, where it's the big ships and cities being destroyed again.
Well,
yeah, but you also want Will Smith.
Yeah, but I kind of want the characters. You want interesting characters that you care about. The nostalgia for Independence Day going on 20 years, and I would argue that's the mistake that they made both marketing the film and making the film in terms of its construction, is that it's all about, hey, look, it's more ships, but they're bigger. When I would argue the reason we still talk about Independence Day 20 years later is because, A, the scale, B, the very of its moment and very optimistic patriotism that, you know, 5 years before 9/11 is almost heartbreaking to see, and the characters, not just Will Smith, but yes, Will Smith, Jeff Goldblum, the relationship with his father, Brett Spiner's goofiness, Bill Pullman's, you know, sort of, you know, George Bush meets Bill Clinton, you know, fantasy president. That stuff resonated far as much, if not more so, than the special effects. It was interesting characters in an old school disaster film with, you know, huge, wonderful special effects in service of that story. This sequel very much felt like the opposite, where they, you know, here's what we can do. Now let's, you know, kind of sort of tell a story then.
Well, a good comparison point would be The Amazing Spider-Man, and I'll say why. Independence Day came out when there was nothing like it. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man came out when there was nothing like it. So The Amazing Spider-Man came out, and it just felt like, regardless of how much you like The Amazing Spider-Man, I like it a little more, Scott likes a little less. It's a movie that it just feels like an average superhero movie. It has a very, you know, generic plot, origin story being told. It's not showing me anything I haven't seen in three other Spider-Man movies already. It's introducing characters I literally have been introduced to before. Like, it's playing in a field that's occupied by many that are always that are also the same as it at this point. And that's a big part of what Independence Day ran into. It's the effects aren't very, you know, unique to themselves, because it's just, okay, there's a bunch of stuff getting exploded. I saw that like a week ago in what other movie? Like, there's nothing here that makes it like it separates itself from the pack. In addition to, yes, it doesn't have stars. It's not, you know, it's not very well written. It doesn't have anything going for it that says like, hey, this is something you need to see.
And I think that's basically what felled the summer overall. And this was something that, you know, I hypothesized about, and sadly I was correct because I didn't want to be, right before the summer started, which is that you had a lot of sequels and reboots to franchises that once upon a time were unique unto themselves or special for one reason or another. Obviously, Independence Day was, you know, the biggest blockbuster since Return of the Jedi, basically. You had Alice through in Wonderland, which was the first big post-Avatar 3 fantasy, Tim Burton movie, in the middle of March, yada, yada, yada. You know, even the last X-Men movie was sort of the Fast Five, Fast and Furious franchise all turn to the rescue type thing. This was just basically a sequel to X-Men First Class. I like X-Men First Class. That was one of the lower grosser ones. As a result, those films, you know, Star Trek Beyond was, oh, it's just another Star Trek movie. They were just sort of, they were not special. They were not unique. They were not diamonds in the rough. They were at best diamonds in a field of diamonds. And because they kept coming one after another, after another, after another, they just sort of blended. And the stuff that stood out, ironically, were the smaller films. You know, The Shallows, Bad Moms, you know, The Lights Out, Central Intelligence. You know, even
don't
something
breathe.
Like Legend of, what was, yeah, Don't
Breathe.
Absolutely. The Perfect Summer Camper. Films that stood out, you know, when everything's special, no one's special, but the things that weren't special, by default, were special. And the blockbuster that did do well, you know, say what you will about Suicide Squad, and we've said plenty, that was a movie that felt like an event when it came out. That was something that, oh, this is something that's exciting. This is something that I want to see, we want to see. General audiences were excited for this film. That's why it has $133 million opening weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, save for Warner Brothers, I mean, Disney cleaned up a lot this summer, this year, really. But Warner Brothers has done a pretty great job, too, despite how good some of these films are. I mean, Suicide Squad, Central Intelligence, Tarzan.
Me Before You did $200 million on a $20 million budget.
Yeah, there you go.
Because it was the only romantic drama in town.
We talk about marketing for some of these Fox movies, which, you know, didn't pay off. Warner Brothers seems to get, even Tarzan. I mean, you know, it's number 10 on this list.
I was very wrong on that.
But that said, I mean, thinking on it, like, I saw a lot of Tarzan marketing. It never looked particularly good, but other people disagree, apparently, because they're like, I got to see that Tarzan movie.
I think in retrospect, you know, it played to adults in a way that a lot of the other franchisee films didn't. You know, A, because, you know, man candy, you know, fair enough. And B, because again, it was a slightly more adult action movie than something like X-Men Apocalypse or Warcraft.
It's also not long, which is nice.
Yeah.
It's not oppressively long.
It's 105 minutes.
Yeah. It's not, you know, taking my entire day away. So.
And in a summer where superhero films did very well, I would argue to a certain extent it was a superhero movie. It was one that we hadn't seen, a franchise, a property that we hadn't seen in live action, other than that Capture Van Dien film that nobody talks about, in like almost 30 years. Now, that doesn't mean that every franchise that hasn't been seen on screen in 30 years needs to come back, but I think there is value, in a little limited value in that, if the product delivers. Had that film not cost $180 million, it would be a franchise.
Let's, I want to get back to Central Intelligence for a second, because this is now, what, the second year in a row that The Rock had, you know, a top 10 hit of the summer based off of an original property, like an original concept, right?
Yes.
San Andreas, I believe, was number 10 or maybe 9 last year. You know how much that made offhand?
$458.
Enough to make a sequel. I know that.
Yeah. It was the second year in a row that The Rock had the top gross, I think. I'm going off memory. Please forgive me if I'm wrong. The second year in a row that The Rock had the top grossing live action not based on anything worldwide.
Good for The Rock. I wish I liked some of these movies more, but
you're right. No, and I read about him a lot, for one thing, because he's one of the only stars that does this kind of stuff, you know, people want to read about. But I think it's interesting that he picks franchises where he is bigger than the franchise. Or he does original properties like, you know, Central Intelligence.
Well, that was what Will Smith was doing for a while too.
Yes, right?
Like they he
was. I wrote that article.
Yeah, San Andreas had a $110 million budget, and it made $473.9 million worldwide and $155.1 million here.
Yeah, no, I think I wrote that article last year that he was basically doing what Will Smith was doing.
Hmm.
As far as someone who could open anything at any time, right now, really the only one left is Leonardo DiCaprio. I would argue because he doesn't do franchises. He has not made himself less valuable by virtue of being a cog in a machine.
I'd say to a lesser degree, because movies don't make as much as DiCaprio's do, but Denzel seems to be stage where his movies open big and, you know, remain relatively leggy. They just don't become massive blockbusters.
Yeah. And they don't cost enough to justify.
Anton Fuqua's not putting out $165 million movies. Alan.
Yeah.
I'm happy to have you here because obviously you know, you lost with 29 points on this episode.
So much, yes. Not by 29 points.
But also, I mean, obviously, total. I mean, while Peter Scott and I, we get to attend various screenings or whatnot, you're more of a, dare I say, general moviegoer.
You're a commoner.
Where you see what you can when you can, and you want to see as much as you can because you're a movie guy. That's why I like having you on this podcast, obviously.
Yes.
But, you have any takeaways?
I'm your peanuts gallery. How can I help you?
Do you have any takeaways from the from how the box office has turned out and like your interest in the summer movies?
Well, I don't know, because I think going into the summer I thought it was going to be a little bit better than it was. The movies that I really liked underperformed in the box office. So Nice Guys, I'm surprised it didn't make more than it ended up making because I thought it was really good. But then
that movie that had a lot of, you know, Ryan Gosling and Crowe, they were, you know, both together in a lot of things and like doing stuff to promote the movie. And they're relatively good movie stars, not necessarily like, man, this movie made $50 million in an opening weekend because it has Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling in it, movie stars, but they're still, you know, liked people.
Yeah, I don't understand, because Ryan Gosling, I thought, could, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, Gosling's never been an opener.
Yeah.
No, not even, but I thought that he'd at least have some legs, but I guess not. But then, a lot of the genre pictures after Civil War, I didn't really think... it was like a dead period until I really enjoyed Ghostbusters and I really enjoyed Star Trek Beyond. So I think between then it just was kind of just lackluster summer content wise. I don't think there was anything really that would pop. And then, like you said, Suicide Squad was an event movie. Everybody was really excited to go see it. Plus all the negative press going into it, you had fanboys that, oh, well, I have to see it to support it and say it's so good. Or, oh, I'm curious about this and I want to go see it. So it just... It was an interesting summer. I think it was a lackluster summer, and I hope our fall and, you know, Oscar time kind of pick up a little bit.
It always does.
Yeah, like, I don't know, at least, I don't know. I'm excited for a few movies coming out this year, like La La Land and Star Wars, but we'll see what happens.
Peter, any thoughts on the on how things have gone?
I mean, I guess I'm just the same sentiment and everything, and it's really weird. It's really weird how, like, again... I've been really liking a lot of these mid-level movies like Shallows and stuff like, and Don't Breathe. I kind of want to see Don't Breathe again. Like, I really enjoyed it.
That's the sequel title.
Don't Breathe Again.
Don't breathe again.
But it's weird. I feel like this summer, the blockbusters were so meh overall for me that like, I'm suddenly not that excited about the upcoming season, which is so weird. It's like, of course, I want to see Star Wars and everything, but like, I don't have that Jones in feeling of like, oh, I can't wait to see what's next. Like, it's weird.
Wait, because of the movie season that's generally considered superficially simple, you're not excited for the more complex movies that'll be coming out?
No. I mean, okay, what I meant was, of course, I'm excited about what I would see as the Oscar movies, the more serious stuff, of course. But I guess I mean more like, I mean, you know what, Scott can tell us better, but I kind of feel like we kind of ran out of our fun holiday movies, except for Star Wars. Like, oh, I guess we have Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, like, we have Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
There's no more Hunger Games. We don't have a Hunger Games.
Well, you got a Harry Potter in its place.
Mm-hmm. It's like
you got the granddaddy of YA novels coming back.
Yeah, although I'm strangely not that excited about that. I hope it's good. I hope I'm wrong, you know. But like, is that David Yates again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I hope. Okay.
He directed those good ones.
Yeah. But it's weird. It feels like I'm not.
Bridget Jones' Baby, of course.
Yeah, I'm not.
Sully.
See.
you have the Magnificent Seven. I want to see Denzel in a Western.
Mm-hmm.
You got a Tim Burton. You got a Tim Burton.
Oh, what? The Tim Burton looks good. I forgot about that. That does look really good.
The
Girl on the Train. Well, I read the book, Girl on the Train, and I hated the ending. So unless they hopefully tweak it or something, I don't know.
I hear they flew Fincher in to do something. And then.
Wait, who's directing Girl on the Train?
Tate, I think.
Yeah, Tate Taylor. That,
yeah.
From the Help and Get On Up.
Oh, meh.
Not the person I think to tap to get the Girl on the Train,
but yeah, it's weird. I'm just not, you know. I'm sure this could all change in a month, and I'll be like, oh, I'm so excited. But yeah, right now I'm not sure.
Never Going Back, starring your boy.
Well, you know me. I mean, I love Cruise, but I'm not a big Jack Reacher guy. You know, So
Tom Hanks in his worst role in Inferno.
Oh, really? That.
I'm looking forward to that one. It looks absolutely ridiculous.
That's you know what?
Trolls.
Can Scott answer why are they doing another Da Vinci Code? I mean, do those do really well?
Yes.
Yes.
They do.
Well, a long
but
time
those
ago.
Like,
yes.
Those feel like the kind of movies that, like,
Peter, a better question is, how many Ron Howard blockbusters have you seen recently? Because I haven't seen many. And guess what he's doing now? The movies that make him money.
You know what, though? I am excited about – didn't Ron Howard – isn't he doing a Beatles documentary? I think he is, right?
I know he's involved with something. I don't know if he's the one.
Yeah, I think he's got some – chronicling the last tour of the Beatles, and that looks pretty good. So, but yeah, I know. I'm not a big Ron Howard. But, I mean, Scott had that thing where he was talking about how Avatar is like the biggest movie ever, but it left no mark. Like somehow people don't. And I feel like those Da Vinci Code movies are like that. I'm like,
hate those movies. I mean,
it's just like, who cares? Like, it's just so weird.
People do. Apparently, we'll see. I guess we'll see what kind of.
Yeah, I
guess.
Well, it was 9 years ago. Or I'm sorry, it was 7 years ago. So.
7 years ago was the last one.
Those were summer movies at that point. Now it's an October movie.
Right.
And it's a thriller, so I mean, there might be an audience, you know, an adult audience that wants to see. And it, you know, the books are very successful. Like, people like these books. I'm very curious about Ang Lee's movie, Billy Lynn's Halftime Walk, mainly because I forgot it was. I forgot it was filmed 120 frames per second. So I'm like, what the hell is that going to look like?
Terrible title.
I wasn't a fan of the Hobbit's FPS look, but Ang Lee being behind something like this and doubling that frame rate, I want to know what the hell that's going to be like in the theater.
True.
Sure, Ang Lee makes good movies. That too. That's nice. Also,
minor detail.
Let's see. And Disney's got Moana coming out.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And Disney's been on a roll lately, as far as their both animated film successes and, you know, regard goes. That's helped.
When do we see Beauty and the Beast? What is that, like March
that's
or
March.
Something?
That's March.
It. Yeah.
So it's basically their Jungle Book Cinderella time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's theirs now.
Yeah, that could be good. I hope Beauty and the Beast is really good, but that's not till March, so it's a while away.
While we're going over fall, we have Star Wars in December. There's also it's coming out Christmas, but Assassin's Creed. I have no idea what to think. I'm by default never optimistic about video game movies anymore because, you know, why? But it's like, I don't know. I don't know what to think.
Apparently they're giving up on Uncharted finally.
Yeah, finally. You have Sing from the creators of The Secret Life of Pets.
That's going to make $1 trillion.
It'll make a ton of money, it will. And then you also have Passengers, which, is there a reason we haven't seen any trailers for Passengers? Like, we're going to get one finally next week, apparently. But
I am excited. Wait, is Passengers this year?
Yeah, it's Christmas. Okay, it's that, long, after you see Assassin's Creed, which you know you will first, you'll go and see Passengers.
Of course.
I forgot about that. Oh, you know, I'm excited.
Hold on. Scott, is there a reason why you think it hasn't been added?
Well, I don't know with any authority, but I would guess because it's not a particularly, you know, spectacle-driven picture,
do we know
they're
that?
Not going to release a bajillion trailers for it. Well, they just have one. Here's the plot. Here's who's in it. Come see it in Christmas.
When did Gravity come out? That was November?
October. Very early October.
But we saw teasers for that, like, way in advance, I believe.
Yeah, but they had actual, you know, that was... I mean, I don't want to give away too much about Passengers. How much do you know about the story?
I know a bit about the story.
Yeah.
But if you're hinting that it's not too effects-driven, that's not what I've come to understand about it. Not necessarily to the extent that Gravity is, of course. But.
No. I mean, it's again, I think it's a kind of movie that, you know, is going to get the people that don't need a bajillion trailers beforehand.
It doesn't need the lead-in?
No. You know, it's Jennifer Lawrence. It's Chris Pratt. You keep telling us they're stars? Prove it. Come to see their movie. I'll have to talk to Sony about when that trailer's dropping.
It's supposed to be next week sometime.
Yeah. Well, makes sense with Sully.
Oh, we forgot. We're all hearing really good things about Arrival.
Don't you just put that Charlie Sheen movie is a classic.
I like that one.
I like The Arrival quite a bit.
It's top tier Ron Silver.
It is top tier Ron Silver.
Really good word of mouth. So, and it's a great director. So that could be good.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily expect it to make... I expect more Sicario money than...
Well, but it only costs 50.
Yeah, so it'll make its change. It, you know, it has like 12 posters and stuff. Like, they're trying to do something for it, so that's nice. It's Paramount, too. It's not, you know, like Lionsgate or something smaller.
Because they have nothing left to lose.
Yeah. What else, guys, as far as the summer's going?
Well, it's... I think in the broad scheme of things, if you want to boil it down overly simplistically, here's what happened this summer. Civil War, great. Most, you know...
You expected it.
Yeah, very good. I have my nitpicks, but it certainly works on its own terms. Nice Guys was great. Nobody saw it. Probably, you know, frankly, because most adults who only get to, you know, maybe see one or two movies a month because they have kids and jobs and all that crap, when that date night came around, they went and saw Captain America Civil War because that is sort of, you know, literally a four-quadrant blockbuster. For adults, it's a Tom Clancy film in capes. So, I mean, it's something that appeals to adults as much as kids. In the same way that the reason that The Martian just massacred everything last October. Because when you have a tentpole like that that really does appeal to adults, the quote-unquote adult movies don't stand a chance.
Like Inferno? This October?
They'd like it to be. But, so then, you know, the summer really doesn't start to suck until Memorial Day weekend, where you get Alice with the Looking Glass and what the hell happened with X-Men.
I forgot those came out the same weekend, by the way.
Yeah, same day.
Same day.
And yeah, I like Turtles, but it didn't do well.
We haven't talked about Turtles at all. Turtles, so that was what you're calling the Tomb Raider trap, right?
Yeah.
The first movie, because people just didn't really like it, despite the massive amount of money it made, there's like, we don't need to see another one of these.
Pretty much. Even though it was much better. Oh, well. It sucks, but and it's scary. But to a certain extent, you know, you only should get one chance to make a first impression, DC. And then, you know, June sort of stumbles along with, you know, Warcraft, and then, you know, Finding Dory was fine, but I don't think anybody was, you know, magically in love with it.
So let's stop there for a second. So Warcraft, that's a big,
that's
a big pothole in the summer. Obviously, there was a lot of speculation about what Warcraft could do. I think most of us have it as a Dark Horse pick. I don't think any of us actually ended up putting it in our top 10, and then the movie goes on to, yeah, not do very well. What did it do domestic? 100?
47.
Oh, Jesus, it did 47?
You said 100? Yeah.
I was thinking like 80, maybe. But 47.
No, 47 and a half.
But what did it do over? What did it do worldwide?
433.
So that's a huge difference.
It is. It's like the biggest difference ever for a Hollywood movie.
Like even like Terminator and Pacific Rim, which, you know, did underwhelmed per se, did 100 here, right? But they still managed to make what, like 400 total, maybe something like that.
Terminator did 90 in the US, 440 worldwide. Pacific Rim did 110-ish, I think. Maybe 103 and did 411 worldwide.
Yeah. So
the thing with Warcraft is A, did 220 in China, which is great. But A, you only get 25% of the gross in China as opposed to 50% in most places. And B, it wasn't any leggier in China than it was anywhere else.
It just happened to be
front. The myth that's being sold that, oh, everyone loved it in China, so China's going to kill Hollywood or whatever. No. They hated it too. There was a fan base that, you know, it was their Suicide Squad, basically.
Did Suicide Squad go to China? Did it ever have that happen?
No.
No, it did not. Okay.
Then, you know, Independence Day, you know, plops the farm, and holy crap, that was a disaster. And then he had July 4th weekend, which, you know, Tarzan was not awful, but it wasn't good. And no one expected it to be good. And then you're kind of thinking, okay, come on, Ghostbusters. And Ghostbusters was fine.
Well, let's pause again for a second. So backing up to Independence Day area, or July 4th area, not to be confused with the movie. BFG also hit, and that was
ironically the biggest bomb of the summer.
Yeah?
You know, say what you will about Disney. They had two bombs, two smashes, and Pete's Dragon, which is a, you know, either or, you know, in between.
So BFG, Peter, you had BFG on your list, like right in the middle.
Right, and then, although, you know what, it's really weird, I didn't even see it. I skipped the screening.
You're like, I don't need this Spielberg movie.
I know, it's so weird. I love Spielberg, but I was like, man, I'm not in the mood for this.
I need to race out to see Roland Emmerich's movie that I didn't get a press invite for, but I won't see the Spielberg movie.
You are what's wrong with America! And the world, apparently.
That's probably true. I've heard it's good. I know, it's my fault.
No, and it's I'm trying. First of all, this is Spielberg's biggest, you know, commercial bomb ever. It's his first genuinely commercial flop.
Because it's,
you know,
really
Munich,
expensive, right?
That's... Oh, yeah. It was his second biggest, most expensive movie ever, which was the first mistake, frankly. You know, you don't spend $140 million on a Roald Dahl adaptation, unless you're Tim Burton and you have Johnny Depp in his peak form in the lead role. And even Charlie the Chocolate Factory did not cost $140 million.
Yeah, but he had Mark Rylance.
Exactly.
Box office powerhouse Mark Rylance.
And Rebecca Ferguson in a cameo.
And
not Ferguson, I'm sorry, Rebecca Hall.
Yeah.
No, that was a tragedy. I mean, it wasn't a terrible surprise, but it was a tragedy. And I think to a certain extent, you know, that's one of the after effects of a concept-driven industry is that, especially when you have numbers, you know, budgets that high, you know, the marquee director doesn't bring you much. But do today's kids really care about Spielberg, the guy that makes, you know, prestigious historical dramas that their parents like?
So with that in mind, like, I don't watch it. Maybe you know more, Scott, because you have kids, but, like, was there much advertising for BFG?
No more or less than anything normal.
Because I honestly couldn't tell you, like, I don't recall seeing many, like, commercials or trailers for it. I don't watch, you know, like, the, you know, like, Disney Channel or whatnot on a frequent basis to, you know if there are, like, various TV ads popping up all the time for BFG, but it's, like, I have to wonder when, like, Spielberg's like, I'm going to make this movie and it's going to cost this much, and Disney's like, all right, do your thing. Like, are they counting on, like, a certain amount of money to be made from something like this? Because it's like, all right.
First of all, at the time, they were still distributing DreamWorks films.
Okay.
And now they're not. And there was talk that they had sort of dumped it because they, you know, this was after they went to Universal. I don't think that's the case. They certainly did everything they could. You know, it was a normal marketing campaign. But, you know,
ironically, that makes BFG Spielberg's first and presumably last Disney movie.
Yes. I think to a certain extent, they, you know, again, because they still distribute DreamWorks, you don't say no to Spielberg within reason. And, you know, it's I don't think he's going to get that kind of budget again for something that isn't Indiana Jones. But I think to a certain extent, he get that kind of budget for something that isn't Indiana Jones.
I guess
nobody should.
I guess Indiana Jones will be his next Disney movie. Never mind.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Now, I don't know what Ready Player One cost, but I do know that that is a concept-driven picture. People like the book. It will play to 80s nostalgia. It'll be Stranger Things, the sci-fi adventure. And then the fact that Spielberg's directing that is going to be a bonus. So, to lead into this, I have no idea how well Mrs. Pettigrew's Peculiar, whatever, Tim Burton's X-Men is going to do. Because aside from the fact that that's a Tim Burton movie, I have no interest in that whatsoever. The fact that there's an entire generation that may not care that it's a Tim Burton movie, you know, what's that going to look like? I'd love to be wrong, but I don't know. I mean, let me put it this way. Would you be interested in all in that movie if it wasn't a Tim Burton movie?
Not necessarily, though I do tend to see these YA adaptations. Like, I've enjoyed those Maze Runner movies far more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
We both like Beautiful Creatures a whole lot.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as, like, would I be racing out to see it if I wasn't going to get a screening for it? No.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, well, I seem to keep seeing these various attempts at making some kind of new franchise out of a popular book series. Yeah, I stumble into it, apparently.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that I want to write about, but I can't think how without having a douchey headline.
It has Samuel L. Jackson as a scary black man, so that's obviously...
no comment.
we paused at BFG, and we went to go. Yeah. So we got to the middle of July, which is Ghostbusters, Bourne, and Star Trek.
Yeah, and those were the kinds that I think that, you know, these are the ones that are going to save the summer. These are the ones that are going to save the summer. And first of all, Ghostbusters underperformed very much. It did not play to the older women that tend to make Melissa McCarthy's movies big hits. They all went to Big Bad Moms 2 weeks later.
Do you think it's because it was a spectacle movie that they didn't want Melissa McCarthy in this manner?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was. It played. It's again. I'm speculating. You know, making this up as they go along because you know I pondered this for a while because you know I thought it would be a lot better. I thought it would do a lot better. Also, because I mean, I did not like the movie nearly as much as I was hoping to, and to the extent that my opinion is remotely the majority, that didn't help.
Alan, you liked Ghostbusters, right?
I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah, I thought it was fun.
Peter, what about you? You saw Ghostbusters eventually, didn't you?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was a better looking comedy than we usually get. Because isn't it the guy who does the Wes Anderson movies?
Yes.
The cinematographer is, yes.
Oh, it looked gorgeous. Absolutely.
I disagree. No, that's me.
Oh, I thought it looked pretty. I thought it looked pretty good.
I think it's colorful. Okay. That's nice, but I don't think it conveys any sense of space beyond we shot this on a studio lot.
You're right. But I'm okay with that kind of movie. But I mean,
I like the original Ghostbusters because it's a great New York movie. I really like the feel of that movie. Like I'm in New York.
Yeah, it irritated me that they filmed it in
I don't know. I am of two minds about the picture. In that, on one hand, there is surely great social value in the idea that hey, look, girls can be Ghostbusters too, or hey, look, women can take the lead in these conventionally boy-centric franchises as well. Having said that, absent the franchise tie, had they just ripped off Ghostbusters, much cheaper, mind you, the stuff that worked, which was the character chemistry between the four of them, would have been emphasized in a way that I felt that it wasn't because of the need to A, pay homage to the original film, and B, justify the exorbitant budget.
Oh yeah, that's the key problem right there. I feel like that connects to the cinematography, where it's like, it feels like the movie's so expensive so it could pay off these like elaborate scenarios, but they just, it feels kind of contained. So it's like,
yes,
spent a lot of money on this stuff that just doesn't, I mean, it's colorful and it, you know, matches up with today's visual grandeur or what have you. And keep in mind, the original Ghostbusters, like, the effects in that movie, some can call them dated, but for their time, it's not like Ivan Reitman was like, let's just slap together a few things and put them on strings or whatever. Like, they created new technology to make those ghosts come alive in that movie.
That was, I think, a $30 million movie back when that meant something.
Yeah, it was expensive for its time. It was just as much an event as this movie could have been this year. But additionally, having it connect itself to the original Ghostbusters, that really hurt it too, because the movie, it legitimately stops in its tracks every time it tries to trot out an old cast member or make some kind of callback, like, you know, a giant spray can scene devoted to creating the title or the, you know, the title logo. Like, there's a lot of stuff like that where it's like, let's see the cast make jokes. Let's do that.
Yeah. Like, yeah. $1 million question. Was Bill Murray trying to sabotage the movie or was that just an accident?
It's hard to deny that he wasn't.
So then, you know, and again, most people like Star Trek Beyond more than I did, so be it. You know, I have my nitpicky issues with the middle. I don't think it works. The second act works very well. But I think even that was supposed to be sort of the crowd-pleasing one you've been waiting for. And unfortunately, it just, for most general audiences, it was not an event. It was, another Star Trek movie. It wasn't the first big Star Trek reboot. It wasn't even the big sequel to that Star Trek that you loved. And, we've kind of got Cumberbatch as Khan, but maybe not, but whatever. It was just, it's a Star Trek movie.
It's a huge come down, too, right? Because the Darkness is, what, like 230, something like
228,
that?
228, yeah. And
so Beyond's 155, so that's...
They got to stop spending $180 million on these movies. This is not going to be a Guardians of the Galaxy-type franchise. They need to give that up. That's the only way they're going to survive. If they're, you know, Jason Bourne isn't a mega, mega, mega hit, but it only cost $120 million. So when that crawls to $400, it's a big hit. And Jason Bourne was just as mediocre as we all expected it to be.
Now, Peter, you expected Star Trek to bomb. Like, you didn't even have it on your... But you legit said those words. You thought Star Trek would just completely bomb, right?
I was so wrong, but I mean, like, I... Well, actually, I wasn't totally wrong.
You were totally wrong. I mean, it was
a bomb.
It didn't.
It is by the summer standards.
It didn't overperform either. Like, it, I mean, most of us had it pretty much in the bottom half of our top 10 lists. So it's like, it's not like any of us were predicting Star Trek would be amazing.
But yeah, I just, the irony is, unlike Scott, I actually really enjoyed Beyond. I pretty much liked it. I have, you know, it's not perfect, but I was like, well, this is an entertaining Star Trek movie. Like, I liked
love
it. But
Beyond.
Yeah,
Yeah,
a lot of people, you know, again, I know I'm a minority, and that's fine, but, you know, it's unfortunate.
I'm miscellaneous because I just don't care about the franchise.
Yeah. And then, you know, we had all been saying, you know, well, I guess, you know, Suicide Squad's going to be the summer savior. And really, up until the last week or so, I would argue to a certain extent we had no hints that it was going to be bad. It wasn't until they started releasing clips over Comic-Con that kind of sucked that I started wondering, okay, what the hell is going on here? Now, I should have known, and I kind of half suspected but dare not fear it, once I saw the Batman v Superman Ultimate Edition and realized, oh, so Zack Snyder made a relatively okay, decent movie, but Warner Brothers cut it to crap to have more Batman stuff in it. Oh, God, what the hell have they done to Suicide Squad now? And once that, you know, was awful, we all just sort of threw our hands in the air and screamed, oh, God, worst summer ever. The irony is, after that, August was terrific.
Yeah.
The best August I can remember. I mean, you had Kubo, you had Pete's Dragon, you had Sausage Party, which was better than I expected.
It was a bold move for Kubo to try to cash in on that shred at a Compton audience. That was,
yes.
It was a good play by him. It didn't quite pay off, but I liked the attempt. It's like, well, we'll come out the second week of August. We'll see how that works. And,
actually, that was the third week of
third
August.
Third week of August. When did Compton come out last year? Was it the third week or was it second week?
Second week. Only because the scheduling is different.
Yeah, it
know.
Is. Yeah. But that's, I mean, Compton made it into the top 10, for at least for our gamble, and it was even higher by the end of the
run.
That's a tremendous amount of money to make within that span. Even just to get in the top 10 for the purpose of our podcast, it made a lot of money in a short amount of time. Like, that's that was an event in and of itself. Which,
it was. That's what Universal did right last year, is they took these films that you sometimes consider counter-programming, like Pitch Perfect, Trainwreck, Straight Outta Compton, and made them events. And to a lesser extent, that's what STX did with Bad Moms. You know, that was an event film for the demographic that film was targeting. And that was the leggiest film of the year, other than the Revenant, but it's going to pass the Revenant pretty soon, in terms of legs, not total gross, obviously.
Is there, so I'm looking at some of the lists here. They're Conjuring 2. You know, it's a horror
great
sequel.
Year for horror. Holy crap.
It's been a great year for horror. It made, let's see, did it do? No, it didn't do better world. No, it did do better
it
worldwide.
It did do a little better worldwide by like a penny.
By a bit. You think there's, I mean, it's a horror sequel. I mean, you can't exactly expect it to just outdo itself, but it's not much of a come down either, and it's a relatively cheap movie.
No, that was a huge win, especially in a environment where most sequels make less than their domestically. And that's the new normal. And that's what Hollywood needs to get used to. You know, with a few, unless you have a Pitch Perfect that opened really small and didn't end up doing insanely well, you know, and that's what people forget about Austin Powers. Austin Powers wasn't a flop. It did pretty well. But then the sequel went nuts. Pitch Perfect, same thing. You know, it did pretty well, had a very strong post-theatrical life. The sequel went nuts. But the era of Pirates of the Caribbean 1 does great, but Pirates of the Caribbean 2 does, oh my God, huge, I would argue to a certain extent that's over. Now watch Star Wars Episode 8 do $1.5 billion, but whatever.
It just breaks the bank instead.
And you know what? It might. You know, you get a shot in the trailer of Luke, Leia, and Rey all with lightsabers on a mountaintop. You got another $1 billion gross.
That'd be killer. Oh, my God.
Yeah. You know, you have that. You put it in the trailer. Boom. You're good as gold.
Although, I mean, you put Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in a shot together. The movie couldn't make $1 billion.
Well, because it was terrible.
But that didn't help, yeah. I guess.
Well, it was not good. And it was also not kid-friendly. And I really, truly think that hurt the film.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I do. I really do. I didn't take my kids. They wanted to see it.
And you slapped them on their hands and said, no.
Well, you know, because Allison, you know, doesn't obsess over this stuff, you know, it wasn't like weeks later when she finally asked me why she never saw the movie. And I sort of had to explain that, A, it was terrible. B, it was really not appropriate for kids. And the irony is there's a much better version of that movie out there on video, but it's R-rated in 3 hours. So, you know, in a couple of years, I'll show it to you if you really want to see it.
Well, let's talk about horror. Speaking of nightmare scenarios like Suicide Squad and successful horror movies such as Conjuring 2 and The Purge election year, which set its own records, I believe.
That was the only live-action sequel that wasn't, you know, a team-up spectacular that made more money domestically than its immediate predecessor this year.
And what else? Lights Out did relatively well.
Yes. Especially, it did $135 and a $5 million budget.
Worldwide, right? Yeah.
Worldwide, yes.
Let's see, what else? What else am I looking at here?
And the neat thing about The Conjuring, if I may, you've got two Conjuring movies. You've got Annabelle with Annabelle 2 coming next summer. Then you've got the Nun, which is the spinoff based around Conjuring 2. You've got your first fully functioning post-Marvel cinematic universe right there.
Take that, Universal Monsters.
Pretty much.
Peter, what are you saying?
No, I'm agreeing with him. I didn't think of that. That's true.
I mean, you've got, you know, five movies at least in a single universe. One of the most expensive ones so far costs $40 million.
See, Don't Breathe, still making money. See, I mean, Money Monster. I mean, the effects weren't great on the monster, but it was
hey, that did triple in budget worldwide. Did 92 on a 27 budget.
Good for Jodie Foster. She can make another movie.
Absolutely. The Beaver, too. And even The Darkness made $10 million on a $10 million cost. I mean, not a hit, but it'll do.
Would Shallows be considered a horror film?
Oh, yeah, The Shallows. My bad.
Yeah, The Shallows. That did, I want to say, 90 worldwide offhand on a $17 million budget. And what I love about that movie is everybody's going crazy about, you know, we must have this release date set in stone. We must have, you know, 5 years in advance, we must have this release date. We're willing to make an awful movie that everybody hates as long as we hit our release date. The Shallows opened 5 days early. They announced that date like 2 weeks early, and it still made a gajillion dollars. If you have the movie, the release date is almost meaningless.
All right, let's move on from this discussion. Let's get to some feedback real quick.
Feedback.
This is where we thank you, Alan. This is where we go over some of the questions and answers on our Facebook page. Emily asked facebook.com/shotnetpodcast. Emily asked one question, then got some questions for us to answer. But where'd that go? The first one I have here is what are things you didn't expect to happen this summer movie season?
Manish writes, we kind of covered most of that, didn't we?
I know we did.
Everything.
But I want our listeners to have to chime in as well. So Manish wrote, I was rooting for it to be good, but I didn't. But I didn't expect Pete's Dragon to be the best movie of the summer, nor did I expect Ghostbusters to fizzle out. I was positive that would be a big hit. Tyler writes, for once, it seemed like sequels and remakes are no longer a guarantee. And Justin writes, Kubo to be so good and not wider released.
It was wide released.
Kubo, it's got its theaters. It just didn't get that audience.
It's doing the usual Nikea business, give or take.
And so now we get some questions here. The same crew asked us some questions. Justin asked a Kubo question. Why do you think Kubo is not accepted as much as other Laika movies?
So far it is.
Yeah.
More or less.
I don't know if it's the August thing. I don't know if it's a marketing thing. But I think Laika in general, short of Coraline, which is, you know, a true hit. I mean, the others, right? That's fair to say, right, Scott?
Well, that held on to 3D screens for weeks and weeks and weeks.
It came out in February.
Yeah.
Others, you know, this and Paranorman were both August releases. Box Trolls was in like mid September. I don't know. I put it up. I think it's a kind of a marketing thing. I don't know how to sell it better necessarily. I don't have the answer to that. But I mean,
I think to a certain extent, it might have scared off parents. It did look a relatively dark and potentially violent adventure picture, more so than something like the Box Trolls or even Paranorman.
Fair, and as we've proven, Charlize Theron and Matthew McConaughey are not the names that you needed to sell the animated adventure. That was Kubo and Two Strings. But at the same time, if they weren't in it, you could be like, well, because they didn't have Hollywood talent, it didn't make any. But like, so it's like it's a weird double-edged sword of how to approach that, given the controversy surrounding the lack of Asian voice talent in general. It's hard to prove a theory on it. As far as star power is concerned, or casting.
Well, we know it doesn't help. So, I mean, the question is whether or not going, quote-unquote, correct would have helped.
I mean, knowing that we know that didn't help, but it's you know, playing it the other way around, you can see the argument being made that because it didn't have something, it didn't work. You know,
yeah.
You can see that same argument happen. It kind of, if anything, it would just it would further that process of continuing to repeat the same mistakes, but it's hard to figure out how to get over that. But also, you know, it's a focus feature. It's not Pixar. It's not Illumination with Universal's money. So it only has so much it can do, I guess. And I certainly saw plenty of posters and ads for Kubo everywhere, but I don't know if like you're saying, Scott, the parent factor of, are they going to take their kids to see this, or are they going to go see some other thing that came out, like, you know, that family-friendly Sausage Party movie?
Yes. My children both want to see that.
Manish asks, if you had the power to remake any summer movie, what would it be? Like, you saw potential, but the execution was sloppy. Well, I think Suicide Squad seems like a pretty good answer to that.
Suicide Squad, Warcraft, Independence Day, X-Men, Jason Bourne, I guess.
I would unshackle Ghostbusters for making so many references.
Yes, Ghostbusters. Yeah, all.
I would, Independence Day, I would just combine that with whatever script they have for the third Independence Day and make one movie. I think that would be the way to go.
Good God. And that was, you know, I noticed when I was doing my worst films of the summer thing, is like, that was the problem, is a lot of these films were glorified prologues for the real movie that was going to come next time. You know, X-Men, Warcraft, Independence Day, you know.
if we want to jump back almost a decade, I would say, you know, splitting up Spider-Man 3 into two movies would have been a better way to go, but that's me. Next question is from Jason. What do you think of this Deathstroke Batman movie rumor? I mean, it's a thing that's happening in a Batman movie. That movie's not coming out for, what, like 6 years? I can wait. I don't have any... I don't care.
I'm happy it's not the Joker.
Yeah, that, you know...
Which is a very sad thing for me to say. I mean, it has nothing to do with Jared Leto. I thought he was whatever.
You can say it's sad to say, but at the same time, I'd say that the Batman movies have done a pretty good job of diversifying the rogues gallery.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen the Joker a few times, but we've also seen, you know, Ra's al Ghul and Scarecrow in movies.
Yeah.
Let alone Penguin and Two-Face and Catwoman. I mean, while there's some, you know, it's not like we got a Goblin again.
I have a question for the panel.
Yeah.
What movie do you think I took a poor young lady to on a date?
Let me think. Let's see here. Let me look at these movies that came out.
You talking about this summer or this week?
Yeah, this summer.
Warcraft?
No.
You should take her to Independence Day Resurgence. And
make
her
It was part
bet.
Of that double feature, but that's not the one. She
wait,
liked
wait,
that
is this
one.
A true story?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh.
Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates?
No.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
What?
Neon Demon.
Oh, good for you.
Peter's favorite film of the year, right?
I mean, it's like my top five. I don't know if it's my favorite, but
she didn't respond to that very well.
I liked it, what it was about more than how it was about it. But
oh,
I
agree.
But I don't know. It really kicks in the last like half hour. Like it really takes all that stuff. I think is great.
Well, yeah, when it's like when it gets crazy, yeah, I mean,
when it's crazy.
It's right, hard not to like it when it gets crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. I just got it on my Vudu, so I'm looking forward to rewatching it. Just because I've only really seen it once, so I'm curious.
You want to see Nicholas Winding Refn do that Vudu that he does so well?
It's true. Him and Cliff Martinez, right? The guy who does the score.
Yeah, the score is great. Yeah,
the score's great.
Always is.
Can't argue that one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good job, Alan. Way to,
well,
clearly you had a second date. Alan, you got last place, by the way, of 29 points.
I know.
You remembered, but I wanted to let you know that.
By the way, who won?
You won.
I won.
You won with 71 points, yeah.
Is that a record?
Yeah, it's a record.
Holy shit, I'm good at this.
Yeah.
Well, technically, you mentioned me first, so I'm first in the movie competition. So there it is.
You're the first to be mentioned.
That's You're first alphabetically.
No, Aaron.
I would take. Well, if we're going by last name, you would be first alphabetically.
Let's go that way.
Okay. Okay, that was feedback.
feedback.
Let's move on though. Let's start wrapping things up here. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week, and we have quite a few here actually. We have Now You See Me 2.
I liked it.
I technically liked it more than the first one. It's still it's still fine. Like it's not.
Yeah.
But it's less like egregious, like let's use visual effects to show magicians doing stuff. Like it's like, oh, this actually, some of this makes sense and it's more fun to watch, which is a credit to, I think, to director John M. Chu, who I tried to support, even though Gem and the Holograms was terrible and G.I. Joe's Allegations I never want to see again.
Pretty much.
But his Step Up movies are great. Step Up 3D is fantastic. I was just saying, John M. Chu made those great Step Up movies, and Alan, you were on that commentary with me to talk about.
It was
to talk about
we
Step
all
Up.
Watched,
We watched, to recall, we watched Step Up 1, 2, and 3 concurrently, each of us watching a different movie in a different place, and did a joint commentary. So.
I need to find that because every time I try to find that, it doesn't work.
That's a good one.
It's a good one.
I think I had number one, right?
Yeah, I was watching 3, and I think Jordan was watching Step Up 2.
You clearly won.
Yeah, yes, I did. Okay, next up, Money Monster comes out this week on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Oh, I just saw Money Monster. I mean, I guess it can be an eh, but I don't know. I watched the whole thing. I was like, all right.
I watched the whole thing. Peter Barrett's Game Revolution.
That's the best review.
I
watched all of it.
George Clooney's still watchable.
The critics agree. Eh.
We saw it.
Peter Press screams, I watched the whole thing on video.
Love and Friendship comes out this week.
I enjoyed that. I saw that very late in the game.
Peter?
I still haven't seen it.
Oh, you have.
I love that.
Oh, you have.
I know. I love that director. I have the disc. I need to watch it. I know. I need to watch it.
Yeah, my lovely girlfriend and I, we went to catch up on that one in theaters. It's good. It's it's enjoyable. It's
How would you rank it with other Witt Stillman movies?
It's in like the middle. I guess I haven't seen every Witt Stillman movie, but the ones I've seen, I like.
He's only got like five.
Yeah, he doesn't have many. What's the one? Not Metropolis. What am I thinking? Metropolitan.
Metropolitan.
Remember when Witt Stillman made that sci-fi dystopian movie where he had a bunch of people underground and they were revolting? Man, classic Witt Stillman. He's great. Oh man. His use of sound is incredible. But no, I think I like Metropolitan the most, and I would say this is probably of the ones I've seen, of all five or six or what have you, it's like in the middle, I guess. The Meddler comes out this week.
The Meddler rocks.
I like The Meddler.
I enjoyed it.
With Susan Sarandon, Rose Byrne, and
I do like them. It takes place in the Grove, right?
Yeah, well, yes, a lot of it does take place in the Grove.
Yes.
Specifically. Sarandon's character loves the Grove. I mainly wanted to see this movie because it's from director Lorna Scafaria, who directed Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, which is a movie I really love.
Oh, I like that. That was good.
That was a big top 10 favorite of mine that year. And so I was like excited to see this movie, and it's good. It's it's a nice little movie. What did she just got hired on for something, right, Scott?
Excuse me, I'm yawning. I apologize. I don't know off the top of my head. She might be on one of the hot lists for Captain Marvel, but I might be mistaken.
That's what it is. Yeah, she's on the hot list from Captain Marvel. That's what it is. That's what I was thinking of. Let's see what else is coming out this week. We have A Bigger Splash.
I need to see that. That was the big one that I missed.
Yeah, that was like one of the smaller, like an indie movie that got like huge, like it was like in the 90% like the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
With Ralph Fiennes, Tilda Swinton, Matthias Schoenaerts, who I really like seeing in movies. Darkness. This was the
is
Kevin.
Is that good? They just sent me the disc. Is it worth watching?
I didn't
good?
See it.
Didn't see it.
Yeah, that's that Kevin Bacon horror movie.
Yeah.
We didn't see it.
Yeah. moving past some current releases, we get to the Iron Giant Signature Edition. It's Blu-ray debut for the Iron Giant.
I only saw that once.
You ever saw the Iron Giant more than once?
I saw it once, and then I got the Blu-ray, and then a friend of mine wanted to borrow it. I was like, yeah, fine. I liked it at the time.
This movie that you're well aware has like a huge following.
I know, but I mean, do you like it more than The Incredibles? I mean...
I like The Incredibles more, but The Iron Giant's still, remarkably great. that's like trying to divide my favorite Pixar movies.
I miss the days when I could have said The Iron Giant is Brad Bird's worst film and be funny.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
The Iron Giant, it's certainly worth it if you haven't seen it. It's a fantastic movie. And
it's great.
It's Blu-ray debut. That's great to see because it also contains The Giant's Dream, which is a documentary that goes over Brad Bird. Actually, it goes over his career. Up into the Iron Giant, and it goes into why that movie failed at the box office and became a kind of a cult icon for animated films later on. So that's it's worth getting for that doc alone. Let alone you get to have the Iron Giant, which is already great. So there you go. Let's see, The Flash season 2.
Season 1 was better.
Season 1 was better.
Let's see, Supernatural season 11. That made me guffaw when I read that.
Season 7 was so much better.
Season 11.
That show peaked at season 6.
Roadhouse Shout Select from Shout Factory release.
Wait, the Patrick Swayze one?
Yes, the Patrick Swayze Roadhouse. It's got a new special collector's edition from Shout Factory. Much better. American Crime Story: The People vs. O.J. Simpson arrives on Blu-ray this week.
So good.
Don't tell me how it ends.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't want to watch the 8 hours of the fantastic 30 for 30 about O.J. Simpson, that you can certainly watch this 10-episode series about O.J. Simpson, which is also quite great. It's amazing that O.J. Simpson had a better summer than most of the movies at the box office.
Right?
Good for the juice, I guess, as he rots in jail for crimes that he actually got convicted for.
Yes,
that juice is spoiled.
I can't wait for that movie, though, O.J.'s 11, where that heist thing goes really wrong. It comes out after Ocean's Ocho, so... Let's see, South Park season 19.
Uh-huh. 19?
Yeah, 19 seasons, going on 20 this...
What show is this?
South Park.
Oh, fair enough.
Which is just as potent and relevant as a social commentary about everything as ever.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, for the sake of Peter, we have A Boy Named Charlie Brown and Stoopy Came Home make their Blu-ray debut this week.
At last!
I like those more than the new one that came out.
That's because the new one stunk.
It's not true. It's really good, and Scott's just really, really sad about it. Let's see. Night Train to Munich makes its Criterion Collection debut this week.
I'm leaving.
Goes keeping track of the Criterions. Hard Target 2 exists. It's now out on Blu-ray. It stars Scott Adkins, among others. So,
if I had the time, I would watch that.
Hard Target 2, finally. That's like, what, 27 years later after Hard Target?
23.
Okay.
Almost exactly. Because it came out late, well, sometime toward the end of the Fugitives, top of the box office streak. So late August or late September.
Wait, so that's like 27 years then.
1993?
What's it, 2016?
Mm-hmm. 23.
I'm sorry, I'm off. Yeah.
That's okay.
I'm all over the place. Let's see. Daddy Long Legs. That arrives on Blu-ray this week. Karate Kid 3 and The Next Karate Kid are now on Blu-ray as well.
Thank God.
Those of you seeking to complete your...
Now plan. Your physical media collection is complete.
Yeah, you got all that going for you. And that's...
Sorry, I'm a little loopy.
I know everyone's been anticipating this Hilary Swank Karate Kid movie, and now they can get it on Blu-ray. So yeah, that's all that's out now this week. I'm sure somebody spent like $1,000 buying every single one of those items. Extremely cool. These are movies that are now on Netflix or series that I can make some mention of. Narcos Season 2. I've still yet to watch Narcos, but I've heard great things about it.
Whoa. I actually just finished... I binge-watched Season 2 today.
Yeah? Good?
It was great.
Great? Okay.
Great. I loved it.
Let's see. Chef's Table Season 3. I know my dad's a huge fan of Chef's Table, so he's excited. High Rise is now on Netflix. Did anyone see High Rise?
It was okay.
Peter, did you see High Rise?
I was
no.
not a fan.
Who's in it again? Tom
Hiddleston.
Yeah, no, I saw the poster.
Tommy Hiddleston.
I saw the poster. That's another. That should be on a poster. I saw this poster. I saw it too, Scott. I wasn't a fan. I think I got it like 5 minutes into the movie. It's like, oh, there's still 2 hours left. Okay.
Yeah. Great. Well. Because what ruins a movie more than anything else?
In media res opens. Let's see. The IT Crowd's it's like big final episode. That's now on Netflix as well. It's if you're a fan of the IT Crowd with Richard Ayoade and Chris Dowd, I'm certainly a fan of that series, and I look forward to actually finally catching this episode because I didn't go out and torrent it. I waited like a normal person to do this. And finally, all four Jaws movies are now on Netflix streaming. So if you have a desire to watch one great movie, one okay movie, and two piles of crap, you can go for it right now.
Wait, which one's okay?
Which is
Jaws
which?
Okay?
Jaws yeah. 2 is okay.
Jaws 2 is fine.
Jaws 2 is fine. And it has one of the best taglines ever, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. That's an amazing tagline.
Brian Collins wrote a good piece a few months ago basically arguing that Jaws 2 is basically the first modern slasher film after Black Christmas.
Huh. Okay.
It was before Halloween.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can find all those now. Let's see. That's extremely cool. Next week's show. Next week, we'll be talking about Sully, the Clint Eastwood film starring Tom Hanks about Sully Sullenberger, heroic pilot, did all that stuff and whatnot. He shot it with IMAX cameras, so that makes me inherently excited about a Clint Eastwood movie. And we'll see how that turns out. That's next week's show, where Abe will be returning. Actually, I'm not sure. Is he returning? He might be. I know he's gone another week in September. We'll see. I might have to have Alan back again.
Well, I'll do it.
Okay.
I really don't want to watch Sully, though. Can I just pretend I watched it?
And let's see. Last thing here we do. What should people go and see now? What do you plan to see next? So we've talked about all these summer movies and what have you. There's still a couple out in theaters right now, so I'm going to ask you guys. I'm going to start with Peter. Peter, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Oh, so it's got to be something I've seen.
That'd be helpful, yeah.
Well, because I am dying to see Blair Witch, but that's in a couple weeks.
That's why I ask, what should people go see now? What do you plan to see next? So you can answer both of your questions.
It's kind of a cliche to say at this point, but probably Hell or High Water. It's really good. Like, yeah, it's great.
And what are you going to see next?
Blair Witch. Well, no, maybe the Bridget Jones screening, but I'm not really psyched about it or anything. What about you guys?
Alan, what should people go see now?
It seems like people should go see Kudo and the Two Strings because that needs money. And what I'm excited for next is Blair Witch, but I'm really excited for Magnificent Seven at the end of the month.
All right. Scott?
Kubu, Pete's Dragon, or Hell or High Water? Preferably all of the above. I'm seeing Sully tomorrow evening.
What else comes out this week? Is there some horror thing comes out this week?
When the Bow Breaks.
Oh, that
That's
comes
the
out this
Screen
week.
Gems annual thriller.
They don't screen those.
No. Looks interesting,
they're
though.
They're too good. That's why.
Yes. The Wild Life, which is the Drexel Lionsgate animated blockbuster.
I've seen no trailer for that whatsoever.
No.
The Disappointments Room, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yes, The Disappointments Room, which ironically was supposed to come out the same weekend as Batman v Superman, which was funny at the time.
And that's from DJ Caruso. He used to make, he made one great movie, The Salton Sea, and then he's just been making studio stuff ever since, and it's been bad. But you like Disturbia, so whatever.
I do. And I'm right. Just remember, ripoffs, not remakes.
Okay, good intentions is one thing. And yeah, I repeat Kubo and the Two Strings and Hell or High Water. That's, yeah, that's what I would say. And yeah, I'll be seeing Sully next. That'd be the, that's the plan there. And yeah, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can find all my movie reviews over on wiseofblue.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at @AaronsPS4, and I'm writing daily over at screenrant.com as well. Peter Paris, where can people find more of your work online?
You can follow me on Twitter at Pajamo, and then I'm currently writing for Game Revolution.
Alan Aguilar, is there any way people can find you doing stuff?
My Instagram, it's Aldo Rain, AlDoRayne, or my Twitter, which is Mr. Aldo Rain. Yeah, that's about it.
All right. Scott Mendelson.
Forbes, that's pretty much where I am. Twitter, Facebook, yeah, nothing fancy there.
All right. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe over on iTunes and Audio Boom, as well as on SoundCloud at hhwlod.com. You can feel free to email us your thoughts on anything we've talked about today concerning the summer movies or anything else over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us over on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, twitter.com/outnow_podcast. We even have a Tumblr page for some reason over at outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. And yeah, that's going to do it, guys. So Peter, Alan, Scott, thank you for joining me to discuss our summer movie gamble results.
Yeah, thanks, man.
This is, you know, congratulations to Alan for placing completely dead last with 29 points.
First, what do I win, by the way?
Oh, everybody, you'll get something. I guarantee it. Everyone, every year I've given the winner a prize of some kind.
Okay.
And you'll get something. But yeah, congratulations.
I'll get what's coming to me.
Yes, you'll get what's coming to you. And congratulations to you, Scott, for
thank you.
Dominating the summer gamble. And yeah, this is always fun. I like doing these results shows and everything. I thank as well the other podcast guests who did not make it this week: Jose, Brandon, Maxwell, and Mark, as well as my regular co-host Abe. It's always fun doing this show for the summer gamble and what have you. And yeah, we'll see what happens next year when we. What do we have next summer? Offhand, what do we have? We have like a...
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wonder Woman.
Transformers. Despicable Me 3. Spider-Man.
We have a lot of stuff.
Christopher Nolan World War II movie that I don't know the name of offhand.
Dunkirk.
Okay.
Episode 8. Yeah, no, Episode 8's in December now.
That's December.
Yeah.
Pirates of the Caribbean, nobody gives a shit. That's going to be a fun press tour. Holy shit. That's going to be a... Fun press tour.
Oh,
Cars 3.
It's Cars 3's next summer, yeah.
Cars 3.
They also have that other movie is that November? Their Day of the Dead movie? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of things, as usual.
Yep.
But this, I think this will be the first time we won't de facto assume that Transformers will be number one next year. So
that's true.
I don't know if
to be fair, it was worldwide last time.
Worldwide, yes, but we don't do that here. We don't traffic in that nonsense, that worldwide shenanigans. That's ridiculous. But yeah, that's going to do it for this week. So until next week when we see what Eastwood's got up his IMAX sleeves, that's going to do it. So until next time, so long and goodbye.
Bye, guys.
It's amazing that O.J. Simpson had a better summer than most of the movies at the box office.
Right?